This debate's coming to a conclusion. I appreciate that greatly. The civil tone, the nature of the discussion, something that we should do more of in this body. But I'd note a couple of quick thoughts to my colleagues. There's been many references made to the historic crop insurance payments made in the 2012 crop year. One of those amazing circumstances where huge amounts of the Midwest, some of the most productive corn land in America, simply didn't produce a crop, or not much of a crop. That's no fault of the farmer involved. That's Mother Nature's decision not to provide the right amount of moisture, or in other places, too much moisture. But you see, that's what crop insurance is all about. When I first came here, we had a system that worked around not crop insurance, which didn't work very well and wasn't subscribed to by a lot of people. We had a system of ad hoc disasters. If you had a problem here or a problem there, then you'd have a special appropriation bill to fund that disaster. And those special bills tended to grow and expand. And over time, they became a huge drain on the Treasury. That's why, starting aggressively in the 96 Farm Bill, pushed even harder by then-Chairman Peterson in the 2008 Farm Bill, the focus became no more ad hoc disasters bills. Have a crop insurance program that works. Make it clear to producers, if you have a problem, you have to have insurance. You have to participate. You have to pay the premiums. Now, over the course of approximately the last decade, setting the 2012 year aside, this has become an amazingly orderly system. Many members of this room don't remember ad hoc agricultural disaster bills because this has worked that well. And I would challenge you, in most, more than the majority of the years, the resources coming in the program have been greater than the payments going out. But that's the way insurance is supposed to work. You pay in good years. You hope you never use the product. But in bad years, the assistance is there. Call it crop insurance. Call it life insurance. Call it fire insurance on your house. It's the principle behind the concept. Now, the specific language we address here. And there's been much discussion about the draft that the United States Senate has adopted in their farm bill. Same 750 number. It does include a study. But one of the main differences between what we're addressing today and what the Senate has in their language going to conference is that the study, in effect, requires that USDA look at the effect of this limitation on participation in the program and determine if that affects the viability of the program. Does it change the dynamics? Does it suddenly become a greater expense as you shrink that pool? And it gives the Secretary the authority to, if that study determines that this will be negative to crop insurance, to suspend the provision. That's not in this sense of Congress. It says, you shall, you will. One other passing thought. There's been a lot of discussion about reducing the numbers from 65 to 50, the percentages. I just simply note to you that in many cases, that in effect is not just a 15% move, that's a 40% move in effect. Think about that. If you're a farmer, which is a business person, assessing the cost of your inputs, trying to match that up with the potential return on your outputs, you're going to make those hard business decisions. Again, I think the world of my colleague, the chairman of the Budget Committee. And I know he has a lot of things on his plate, and I know he's had a great many challenges in his tenure as chairman of the House Budget Committee. But I would tell you that I think the Ag Committee has worked very diligently to craft language that we are now about to send to conference to work out the ultimate bill that reflects a lot of open process in committee, on the floor, a lot of input with motions to instruct today, and another sense of the House resolution. We've acknowledged and responded to that input. you've battled as members of this body and debated and discussed and voted on all of these issues before. I just ask my colleagues, remember what this body decided not all that long ago. And also, we go to conference with the Senate. It's going to be a very difficult thing to protect our $60 billion in mandatory spending reform that you've directed us to do. Give the committee, give me, give the ranking member as many tools and as much flexibility as you can so that we may prevail from the House's point of view in accomplishing common policy with the Senate that meets not only the goals of this chamber, but the needs of this country. With that, Mr. Speaker, I respectfully ask for a no vote, and I yield back the balance of my time.
The gentleman from Oklahoma yields back the remainder of his time. The gentleman from Wisconsin is recognized.
I yield myself as much time as I consume. I want to thank the chairman of the Agriculture Committee for a very civil debate. He and I have talked about so many of these issues. We've worked so well together, and he has done the yeoman's work on moving these bills to the floor. On this particular issue, we don't agree. He may not think that I'm helping, but I think I'm helping by passing this. Reason is, this passed 59-33 in the Senate. If we pass it here, that just takes off of the table one contentious issue that they don't have to negotiate in conference, making it easier to focus on the other things that you have yet to reconcile in conference. So we're actually trying to help the Ag Committee out here in one way you could put it. But in a more very serious note, I want to talk about a few of the criticisms. Pooling. One of my friend from North Dakota mentioned, you know, it's important to have crop insurance with these people with very, very high adjusted gross incomes in the pool to make it cash flow. That's an actual argument that works with health insurance. You know, healthy people subsidize sick people. But that's really not an argument that I think flows with this kind of insurance. Point number two, no one's saying that a person who has high net worth, who has a high adjusted gross income, can't get crop insurance. All we're saying is just don't subsidize them as much as everybody else. That's really not asking a lot. What we're saying is, if you're a farmer and you make $750,000 of adjusted gross income or higher, you don't get subsidized by the taxpayer for your crop insurance as much as everybody else. Your subsidy is 15 percentage points lower than the people who make less than $750,000. You still get crop insurance. You can still buy it. You'll still get a subsidy, just not as much as everybody else. Look, if you buy insurance on 50% of your acres, instead of the government paying for 67% of that insurance, it will pay for 52% of your insurance. If you buy insurance to cover 65% of your acres, instead of the government paying 59% of the cost, it will pay 44% of the cost. If you buy insurance on 85% of your acres, instead of the government subsidizing 38% of the cost of that coverage, it will subsidize 23% of the cost of that coverage. So there's still a subsidy. Look, you're not penalizing or punishing success if by not subsidizing people as much. If we were having a tax debate, talking about raising taxes, then you're penalizing success. If we're talking about taxing and taking money from producers, from successful people, from businesses, making any amount of money, then you're penalizing success. What we're saying is just don't subsidize people as much, because this subsidy is taking money from hardworking taxpayers, from their taxes, to give to somebody else. And what we're saying is, let's not take money from hardworking taxpayers to give as much to farmers who are making more than $750,000. We just don't want to subsidize them as much. That's not punishing success. The other point is, this is one of those rare moments where I think there's bipartisan agreement that a farm bill really ought to be for family farmers. The purpose of the farm program is to make sure that individual families can stay farming. And that means that safety net needs to be there for that family farmer. Look, I know in Wisconsin, our farmers, most of them don't make $750,000. So it probably doesn't affect many of the corn and bean or dairy farmers that I represent. And maybe in North Dakota and other states, there are people with thousands of acres that make that kind of money. I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. But I still think that our taxpayers shouldn't have to subsidize them as much as the family farmer. And so this is one of those opportunities. I think Congress can speak with a bipartisan voice. I really believe if the amendments, the Hanna-Pingree Amendment or the Blumenauer-Mulvaney Amendment, had them been made in order, they probably would have passed. So this is our chance here in the House to speak with one voice on a bipartisan basis. Let's not subsidize folks at the high end as much. Let's protect that family farmer, and let's agree with the Senate and take this issue off the table as one of those contentious issues, because we are agreeing, bipartisan, bicamerally, that we ought to have a farm program for the family farmer and somewhere limit these subsidies. That's all we're asking for. And with that, I ask for passage, and I yield back the balance of my time.